101.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported JAZZ 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th of February, Anno Domini 2012, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. We'll do it by ones and twos. Let's start with Google, shall we?
Yeah, why not?
People constantly reach into a pocket to check a smartphone for bits of information. We'll soon have another option, a pair of Google-made glasses that will be able to stream information to the wearer's eyeballs in real time. According to several Google employees familiar with the project, the glasses will go on sale to the public by the end of the year. They are expected to cost around the price of current smartphones, or somewhere between $250 and $600. The good little margin there. The people familiar with the Google glasses say they will be Android-based and will include a small screen that will sit a few inches from someone's eye. They will also have a 3G or 4G data connection and a number of sensors, including motion and GPS. Rumor also has it that the glasses will be Android-based and cited a source that described their look as that of a pair of Oakley Thumps. Thumps are Oakley makes very high-end, very sexy glasses, sunglasses. And the Thumps are the ones with an MP3 player built in. They will also have a unique navigation system. The navigation system currently used is a head tilting to scroll and click. They say it's very quick to learn. Once users adapt at navigation, it becomes second nature and also indistinguishable to outside users. The glasses will have a low-resolution built-in camera that will be able to monitor the world in real time and overlay information about locations, surrounding buildings, and friends who might be nearby. This gets spookier and spookier. The glasses are not designed to be worn constantly. Duh. Although Google expects some of the nerdiest users will
wear them a lot. No, they have to put that in there. They have to.
But will be more like smartphones used when needed. Internally, the Google X team has been actively discussing the privacy implications of the glasses, and company wants to ensure that people know that if they are recorded by someone wearing a pair of glasses with a built-in camera, that people will know if they are being recorded. The project is currently being built in the Google X offices, a secretive laboratory near Google's main campus that is charged with working on robots, space elevators, and dozens of other futuristic projects. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google's heads-up display glasses. Your choices are can't wait, should be interesting, won't ever get them, thanks, and plan to wear them while I'm driving. So far, we've had 37 people who have voted and won't ever get them is far in the lead. Over half of you have decided that. Of course, I suspect you'll have a little more to say about that. So when you're done with that particular choice, check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to a truly great website where you can enter your opinion as seven people already have. It should be pretty interesting. And, of course, that's our question to you. What do you think of Google's heads-up display glasses? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Next stop, They Live.
Yeah, exactly.
where's Roddy Piper? He's still around, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he might be. I don't know. Well, click on his name.
Click on his name, yeah. See where he is. If Hulk Hogan can come back.
No, I think he's gone. Is he gone? Yep, he's around.
He's still around.
The premise behind They Live, it's a science fiction movie. Aliens live among us, and Roddy Piper, among other people, has a pair of sunglasses that lets him see who the actual aliens are. But, you know, seriously, this is interesting in a very very, very geeky kind of way. But it also is kind of scary. The security implications are huge. And the you can already be filmed without your knowledge or consent these days. Nobody seems to care.
And we pretty much are. What was that statistic? People are caught by security cameras dozens of times a day, ATMs and street cameras and cameras in businesses and whatnots.
Yep. And everybody's got a cell phone with a camera in it.
Yep.
Nowadays, you can't get away with anything. So, but to actually be able to wear a pair of glasses that turns you into the Terminator, in the sense of that, you know, he could see distances and stuff would appear and things like that. I get it. It's probably pretty cool, but I honestly worry about people driving. I can't wait for the first lawsuit, and I hope I'm not involved.
Well, that's the whole thing now. Insurance companies, because, you know, of tracking and everything else, the cameras and all this other stuff, the person that's in the accident or people filing the claims, they want to know if they were on their cell phones or even texting or anything else. Right. And I say cameras nowadays are all over the place that can catch you driving through intersections and see you on the phone.
Yep.
We already have...
I almost got killed on the way here.
Yeah.
Some guy drifted into my lane because he was on the cell phone. I need to take the advice I gave you about air horns.
I love mine. Tell you, I'm half tempted to put them on my HHR because I told you the story there for the folks that didn't hear it. One time I was going along on the trike, going up Culver Road, coming up to East Avenue, and this young lady who's on her cell phone started to drift over and shove me over because I'm already in the left-hand turning lane. She's coming my way. Well, luckily, her window was down a little bit, and I came right alongside her, and I laid on my air horns. You saw a phone go boom off to the right, straight ahead, and whether she was turning right on East Avenue, I'll never know because she did. She went the opposite way. It's like, you know,
she may never know that you weren't a tractor trailer.
She didn't look. All I know is I, you know, that seat might have been a little damp, too.
Yeah, but
I definitely woke her up, you know, and said, hey, I'm sorry, I'm exposed out there. You know, I mean, it's not like I've got a lot of metal wrapped around me and that type of stuff, but I don't need folks being distracted.
I have always said the biggest danger on motorcycles is other drivers.
Oh. You got to assume everybody else doesn't see you.
Right.
That's the assumption that I've ridden now for years. That, you know, sorry, I don't care. I don't take it for granted. You can't. I already had one guy, you know, I went down, what was it, in 96, where I thought a guy saw me and there was just two of us. And that's where I got my broken wings. And what that says is when you have an accident, and it was an old gentleman. And he was literally looking through the steering wheel.
Yep.
And pulled in front of me. I don't know whether he panicked. It was a Sunday morning. I locked up the bike, and I couldn't go to the right because there was like that huge curve.
Yeah.
And then traffic coming on, and I hit gravel.
Yeah.
Because it was near this entrance of this mall, and the bike just wound up. The tires slid out from underneath, and went down, sliding down the highway for a good, I bet you a good 25 feet or better. Popped the shoulder out.
Yeah.
And the old man left me laying there.
Sure
he
did.
Luckily, my buddy came back, and he took off. The cops were right there right away, but he was saying, 10 to 1 odds, that guy didn't have either insurance or didn't have a license.
He might not even have ever seen you.
That could be, too.
Yeah. There's already apps, in fact, there have been for a while, that let you text while walking by turning on the camera on your phone. So you can see where you're going while you're looking at your phone to text.
No.
Well, there will be people who think that's perfectly okay. We have cameras for backing up, don't we?
Yep. There were things a few years ago. Was it Mayor Bloomberg in New York City wanted to ban texting while walking because people keep...
That's just great comedy.
Well, walking into light poles and stepping into the street.
That's
no,
comedy.
It's New York City. People do that anyway.
Yeah, right. No, I think New York needs all the laughs it can get, so I don't have a problem with that.
No, not at all.
As long as they're not walking into the street and getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
We were driving my daughter to the train station once, and we were stopped at a sign, And we all just happened, all three of us just happened to look over at the same time. There was a young lady dressed to go dancing, walking along, texting on her phone. Boyfriend's walking next to her, texting on her phone. Boom!
They were
right
probably
into
texting
a light
each
pole.
Other.
Probably texting each other. Right into a light pole. He never saw it.
Yeah, kept
just
going.
Just kept on walking. And she's lying there on the ground, moving, so I knew she wasn't. Yeah. She hadn't killed herself. But
a little dazed. Hurting for certain.
I guess it is what it is. That's why, you know, here's the part I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
99% of the phones now do hands-free.
Yeah.
You're in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just actually talk to someone hands-free? I mean, it's marginally better than talking on a phone with it in your hand, but it's much better than texting while you're driving.
I do it all the time. Yeah. I've got my hand, the Jabber on my visor. I just turn it on, and I can be hands-free the whole time.
There was a recommendation from the NTSB to ban all electronic devices from cars to cut down on driver's distraction, even hands-free headsets. And
now there are phones where you can get a television in the front seat. That's safe.
Yep, for the front seat passenger. But so the usual rebuttal to that is, are you going to ban the radio too? Are you going to ban heater controls? Are you going to ban passengers?
Right.
Every time I drive anywhere with my wife, she's always going, and that's, I look at her to see what's wrong, instead of looking at the road to see what she just saw.
Yep. My daughter does that all the time. What happened? Oh, Zoe just sent me a text. Okay. Keep it to yourself then.
Yeah. There's a car coming. I could see that, but now I can't because I'm looking at you because you distracted me.
Great. It's just, it is kind of amazing.
But the crazy things you see, people putting on makeup, reading news. I've seen people reading the newspaper at rush hour because they creep forward 6 inches and read another line. Creep forward 6 inches, read another line.
We just had a caller there. He wanted to know, evidently a few weeks ago, we talked about a device that makes beeping and siren noises and all that type of stuff.
Oh, the Think Geek Distractor thing. What's the name of that?
Oh, the Annoyatron 2000?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it's a tiny little device.
He wants to know where we can get it. He can get it.
ThinkGeek.com. Think, T-H-I-N-K, Geek, G-E-E-K, ThinkGeek.com. It's the Annoyatron 2000. At least that's what it was called when I bought one. And it's a tiny little device with a magnet on one end, so you can stick it under somebody's desk or whatever. And you set it up with the noise you want, and it's usually a quiet noise, a little chirrup or a little beep or something along that line. You set how often it's going to go off, like no quicker than 5 seconds or whatever, and...
They have a new one called the Eviltron.
Oh, nice. It's even smaller.
Makes creepy noises.
Very nice. Very nice.
But it's out of stock.
But it's out of stock. Of course it is. But the Annoyatron 2000, is that what it's still called?
Just, yeah, Annoyatron.
The Annoyatron. Now it's just the Annoyatron. 2000.
Yeah, that's
mine
ancient
in 1999, so everything was called 2000. But the Annoyatron is a pretty cool little toy. It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat.
Well, that was one of the...
April is coming. April 1st is coming. Yeah. So now is the time to order your Annoyatron.
That was one of the sort of the classic stories about Steve Wozniak and making his television noise burst thing, where he could walk into a room and push a button on a little box in his pocket, and the TV would go nuts because it was basically just an RF noise generator. And so back in the days of antenna are coming back now.
Yes, they are.
Because people are fed up with high cable bills. So someone would go over to the antenna and try to adjust the antenna to get the TV working again, and he'd let go of the button. And he could keep it going on. I think in his autobiography, I read that some guy kept on for like half an hour until they got him standing on one foot, holding his arm in the air, twisted around his back, holding the antenna in the other hand, and then he left the room. And the guy was still standing like that to get the TV to work.
I'm waiting for, and I'm sure they can't do this for legal reasons, but I'm waiting for them to jam cell phone signals inside movie theaters.
Well, why can't they?
911 calls.
911 calls.
I'm sorry. Hello. Yep. For how many years?
The first time someone has a heart attack and can't dial 911, the theater gets sued.
What they do before phones.
It is what it is. Before phones is different. They didn't have another choice.
Yeah. Now the ushers are watching the theater with night vision goggles to make sure no one's stealing the movie with a camcorder.
Right. All right, look, we're going to take a quick break, but you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on the wonderful, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
With the weather report there of light, breezy snow. I get up this morning, and it's a blizzard. I can't see, so I'm creeping to work.
Light and blowing snow with breezes.
I get to work in Victor, and it's terrible. You know, there's 6 inches of snow in the parking lot. So I text Jackie saying, can you come early? Because I know it's going to be a rough ride to Greece. They had no snow at her house 3 miles away.
Wow.
So she didn't even bring the snowplow when she came to work. She didn't understand what my urgency was on the text message. You know, what is he, lazy? He goes to Greece every week.
Right. Foxconn Technology, one of the biggest manufacturer of products for Apple, Dell, Hewlett-Packard, and other electronics companies, said that it would sharply raise worker salaries at its Chinese factories. Foxconn said the salaries for many workers would immediately jump by 16 to 25% to almost $400 a month before overtime. The company also said it would reduce overtime hours at its factories. Labor rights groups say that over the years, many Foxconn plants have violated Chinese labor laws by pushing workers to endure excessive amounts of overtime. Criticism has grown over working conditions at several Apple suppliers in China, including Foxconn, which employs more than 1 million workers to assemble some of the world's most popular devices. Apple announced last Monday that the Fair Labor Association, a nonprofit group, would provide independent audits of its supplier factories in China and elsewhere. Apple said the group's findings would be made public. The association began inspecting Foxconn operations in China this week. Apple and Foxconn, which is based in Taiwan, have strongly denied allegations that the workers are treated poorly. But Apple has acknowledged in its own audits that some of the suppliers in China violate Apple's own code of conduct, with instances of child labor, forced overtime and unsafe working conditions, and evidence that employees are sometimes exposed to hazardous and toxic chemicals. In recent years, Foxconn factories in China have experienced a series of worker suicides, and labor rights groups have documented various abuses. Last year, 4 workers were killed and about 20 were injured because of a dust explosion at a Chinese factory that was producing the Apple iPad. The auditor at the Fair Labor Association said recently that he already found tons of issues at Foxconn plants. He did not detail the problems. How do you feel about conditions at the Foxconn plant, and do you think of them every time you handle your electronic devices? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Going off to another side topic, though. Steve, on the iPad 3, what else have you heard?
Well, most of the rumors are pretty well convinced that it's going to be the Retina display, double resolution, so 1536 by 2048, which is higher than pretty much any computer display out there, which is one reason I kind of don't think, because that's going to be expensive. Are they going to be able to keep the price point? Unless maybe they only put that in a very high-end model.
Yeah, what have you heard as far as models? You
know? Yeah, pretty much the same capacities, the 16, 32, 64 gig capacities. Better camera. What's interesting is the iPad 2 has an HD camera on it, but it's really, really low resolution compared to other cell phone cameras. But it is HD. We've sort of talked about that for years, that television is very, very low resolution compared to computers. And now even HD resolution, 1920 by 1080, is still pretty low. My 13-inch laptop is 1280 by 800, so it's HD resolution already.
So is mine.
Yeah, 11-inch.
Yeah.
So, you know, computer resolution is much, much higher than monitor resolution. There's also a lot of rumors that they're going to add an LTE chip. So that it can run on the 4G cellular instead of the 3G that iPad 2 has now. But again, that's I'm not sure about that because the LTE isn't really rolled out nationwide yet. I think between Verizon and AT&T, there's like 100 cities, which sounds like a lot, but it's not very much of the country.
But they're the 100 big cities.
Right. So if you live in a big city, that was sort of the big thing with the 3G, too. If you live in a big city, you'll get pretty good 3G.
And they're the big cities that are having the most problems with 3G.
Because they don't have enough towers for 3G, and the process to get new towers takes years.
So my suggestion would be that, yes, in fact, if you're going to have a new tablet, it should have 4G LTE in it. Because in all the places you're having trouble with 3G, if you can move to 4G and then start having trouble with that,
yeah,
you'll be better off.
The other thing, well, I was surprised when you said 16, 32, and 64.
They might double that.
I was going to say, given the models, I would think that they go like 32, 64, and 128. Because if you're going to start adding these other cameras that are going to take the higher resolution pictures and everything else and doing the movies, you know, front and back cameras, and if folks want to do captures and all that other type of stuff.
Well, with PhotoStream on iCloud, you don't necessarily need to store your pictures on the device.
But some folks like to have it there and then move it off to their own.
And who can afford the data plan anymore?
Right. So
to move all that
One of the interesting rumors is that, well, typically when a new product comes out, the old products drop in price as they're discontinued.
Right.
But one of the rumors is that the iPad 2, they may keep one or two models at a lower price. And the iPad 3, with its better screen and better cameras, may come out at a higher price. And nobody knows for sure yet because there's been no official announcement. All of the rumors are pointing to March 7th, which means sometime this week there should be an announcement that the announcement is coming.
Right.
Because Apple has to get the press to come to the press announcement that there's something being announced.
So here's my other question. I'm sort of leading around to what do you think about the twos that are currently price point
on
those.
Probably drop in price. What happened last year when the iPad 2 came out, all the iPad 1s dropped $100. And we sold out of the $399 iPads really quickly. You know, lower prices are better for everybody. But we don't know until they actually do it. There's some rumors, as I said, that the iPad 2 may drop in price and stay a current model. And then some rumors that the iPad 3 is going to be high-end only, you know, with that Retina display. So they may not make all of them the Retina display.
Okay.
That'd be interesting. Frustrating. Yeah. And it's frustrating for us as dealers is currently with the iPad 2, there's 18 different models. So we've actually been fighting for the last couple of weeks to try to return some of our iPad 2s because all the rumors are saying the 3 is coming out.
Well, that's
so we've got to stock 18 different models. We got to have 3 or 4 of each, and we've got two stores. So we've got 50 to 100 iPads.
Well, that's what, because I've been looking both at the iPad 2s. You know, if they go down, get something like a 32 gig versus going with the Nook tablet.
Now, I bought my wife a Nook tablet for her birthday.
And everyone who didn't buy it on that particular
day.
Yes.
Well, it was.
And I sent you that.
Yeah, you sent me the link. Yeah,
what happened is he's been joking about this, that he was going to buy one and the price was going to drop the next day. So I read a news article that said they've dropped the price of the Nook. And so I immediately sent it to him and said, did you buy a Nook yesterday? And he wrote back something very rude that I don't think you should send through email.
Actually, what happens, they came out with a new model.
What'd they drop it to? Because I know it's normally $249.
It's $249 for 1 gig of RAM and 16 gigs of storage. Mm-hmm. They dropped it to $199 with 512 RAM and 8 gigs of storage. So now it's the same capacity as the Kindle Fire.
Right.
But it still has a faster processor than the Kindle Fire. Right. The Nook Color, which is more the same hardware as the Kindle Fire, dropped to $169. So that's a single core 800 megahertz chip for the Nook Color for $169. And then the dual core 1 gigahertz chip is now $199. But the one thing I have noticed playing with, I have to play with it too in the Nook tablet. and I actually read a blog entry about it. The Android apps on average are much more expensive than on Apple. On the Apple side, there's a lot more free apps that have advertising in them, and that's why you get them for free. Or you get a free app and then you buy additional things inside the app. And I'm seeing that on the Android market that more of the apps cost a dollar or two.
On the Nook market,
yeah.
On the real Android market, it's the opposite. We have more free apps than the iPad, and they're generally cheaper when we do buy them. I mean, I can't tell you the last time I bought anything for more than 99 cents.
Yep.
And but when it comes to the tablet, the Nook market from Barnes & Noble, you're right. The prices are higher and there are fewer free items.
So I got to figure out how to get the Android market on the Nook. And that link I showed you last week on how to get the Kindle app on your Nook, because that's the nice thing about the iPad is you got the Apple Store, the Kindle Store, the Barnes & Noble Store, and the Google Store. You can all run on one tablet.
Right.
With the Kindle, it's pretty much just the Kindle Store, and the Nook is pretty much just the Nook Store. But that link I found to put the Kindle app on the Nook was a book you had to buy to get the instructions on how to do it. Because, oh, great, you can put the Kindle app on the Nook. No, it was a $3.99 book you have to buy. And all the comments were, you ripoff or joke or, here's how you really do it. That was crazy.
All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. By the way, I did become a member after I talked to you the last time.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your membership. As the rest of you know, we are member-supported, and Larry is one of the pillars of support for this station.
Well, thank you,
Larry.
I have a question. I told you earlier that I purchased an iMac right after Christmas.
Right.
And the last couple of nights, I've been trying to create an Apple ID so I could get new apps. Most of them I'm interested are free, but I'm willing to pay for a few. The first few times I tried to create an Apple ID, I wanted to use PayPal, and of course, it's, for some reason, it didn't work. So the other night I said, okay, just let me put my debit card number in, and everything seemed to work. I got a message back saying that you will receive an email shortly with further instructions, and you're good. Well, that was four nights ago, and I haven't received anything. I'm not quite sure what to do.
What we've seen happen sometimes is that people misspell the email address they put in. When you create your Apple ID, which is often an email address,
mm-hmm.
one of the things in your Apple ID is your email address, and
okay.
that's the email that the address they use to send you the confirmation email before the account is fully created.
Okay.
So it's possible you misspelled your email address, or it's more likely that it's in your junk folder. The email from Apple to activate your Apple ID may have got
right.
put in your junk folder. What email service do you normally use?
Well, I have my work email address at Xerox, which I use quite frequently, but then I also have an email address for Time Warner. And
so
I believe I used the Time Warner email address. I'm pretty certain that I did, but I will go back and check just in case I had
a
loss of memory of something.
You may also need to log into the Roadrunner webmail interface
right.
and look at the junk mail folder there, because they filter some junk before it gets to your computer at all.
Oh, okay. I had not thought to do that.
Yeah, you can go back to appleid.apple.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a manage account button, and one of the options that it will give you is to resend that verification email, and you can verify that it's got the right email address for you.
Okay, so that's appleid.com?
appleid.apple.com.
Oh, appleid.apple.com. Okay.
And that lets you manage
right
your Apple ID.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Thank you for your help.
And you were doing something pretty good. We like to recommend to a lot of people to use, you can use an iTunes gift card as the money on your Apple ID, so that's the safest way, because then they can't drain, if someone breaks into your account, they can't drain your credit card balance. They just drain that $20 gift card you put on there.
Ah, didn't know that. Well, thank you for the tip.
Sure.
Thank you so much. You guys have a great day.
You too, Larry. Thanks. Our newest member at member-supported Jazz 90.1. Very, very nice. We've also discovered that you can, and it's not an easy process, but you can create an Apple ID without any credit
right.
card.
Credit
thing.
Card, debit card, PayPal, iTunes card, anything.
Right. It's not easy, but it is doable.
The trick is you go to the App Store, or even the Music Store, and you buy a free something for $0. you still need to, it's technically a purchase, and you need to put in your ID and password. But if you create your Apple ID while purchasing a free app, then you don't have to put payment information in your account.
Right. Which means that when you want to purchase something else for real money, then you better have an iTunes card or...
Right. You have to add money to that account.
Or go in and change your account information.
Yep.
Right. The other part of that problem that a lot of people are finding is that when you do put in your Apple to purchase something, you put in your Apple ID and it takes, it's good for 15 minutes. So we're finding that a lot of people buy something, a game for their kids, give the iPad to their yep. kids, and then the kids start buying in-game things because that Apple ID is still good for the next 15 minutes.
Without entering your password again.
Right. And so that's a real problem that people are need to be cognizant of. If you're going to give something to your kids, buy the app you want to give them and then wait 15 minutes before you give them.
Yeah. Or log out of your Apple ID account
right.
Completely and then they can't buy anything again.
Right.
Without logging back in.
Right.
That was one of the big problems with the Amazon Fire, that especially if you bought it from Amazon, it came preloaded with your Amazon account information in it, and one-click buying turned on automatically. So
nice.
You know, whoever's looking at your Kindle, you know, it's the big thing. You play in the store, and they'll hit a buy button, and it does.
Nice. All right, listen, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415, because we're going to be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you can join the conversation at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Not by calling me on my cell phone. Our next caller is Gary from...
No, we got it. That was payback, dude. That was payback.
That was payback, and you know it.
You got him, he got you.
He got me. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I really enjoy the show, and yes, I am a member.
That's what I like to hear. Membership is coming up, you know.
Pardon me?
Membership is coming up.
Yep, and I'm looking forward to it.
Good.
Well, I have a Security Tango question.
Yes.
It all started when I stupidly clicked allow instead of quarantine when AVG caught a virus.
Oh, boy.
So I took it into a shop. As far as I can tell, they cleaned it out. But when they did that, they took out all the Security Tango programs and replaced them with Microsoft Security Essentials, which claims to be able to take care of antivirus and anti-malware. And I have my doubts about that from any program, but particularly from Microsoft.
Well, okay.
I'm wondering, first of all, am I going to run into conflicts if I were to reload at least stuff like Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware? That's one thing. And secondly, would I be better off going back to AVG for my antivirus?
Let me tell you one thing. One, before you do any installing or uninstalling, do you have Revo Uninstaller on your computer?
Yes.
All right. That's the program you want to use to uninstall the Microsoft products.
Okay. I don't find many problems with the Microsoft stuff, but it's not a bad idea to run.
They don't update it as often as right. Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware. Microsoft is into the mode of, maybe once every couple of weeks or, you know, maybe once a week if we're lucky.
Every time I boot my Windows machine, it wants to do an update.
Yeah, but you don't go into Windows
machine.
Maybe
only boot
once
a week. Yeah.
There you go. You know, but, I'm sorry. Malwarebytes and all those are updating daily.
But more important to me, there's an ethical question here. Did they ask you if they could remove your antivirus software and replace it with Security Essentials?
No.
See, that bothers me right there. I mean, I get that they think it's a better product. Okay. But you clear that with your customer first.
Yeah.
Rather than
do.
Just wandering around inside their machine moving programs around. That would annoy the heck out of me, if not actually make me angry.
Well, the only thing, in defense of some, one thing I will do is if a program is broken, I'll uninstall it. You know, and then let the person know. I'll put some other products on there just to protect. So say they have the Norton. And, you know, they've got to have the disk to reinstall it and everything else. I don't want to have the machine leave. So I'll put our products on there telling them, hey, this is damaged, but I didn't want your machine going out, you know, without any some protection. Because the minute you click, you know, hook it up to the internet, boom, you're susceptible. So I'll put it on there. And what they can do is pull out the CD, reinstall the Norton, you know, and take our stuff off. But, you know, I just don't want to. But just to go ahead and just do it and not tell anybody, no, that's totally wrong.
Yeah, and I just, that bothers me.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's, at heart, the Microsoft Security Essentials are okay. As Dave said, they do not update as regularly as I feel secure with, and clearly Dave doesn't either. So my suggestion would be to replace them with the Tango stuff that you used before and that
you're
updates much more regularly.
Okay. The one thing that I thought about with the that maybe would be a benefit with the Security Essentials is that I think they claim to be active protection on malware, whereas at least the free versions of the Tango malware, anti-malware, is more like passive, I think.
Yeah,
basically.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
That's true, and that's a point to the in the favor of the MS Security Essentials, and I agree with that. So that's just the decision you're going to have to make. You know, as Steve said, they're not bad programs. They do the job. I haven't seen any egregious problems with them. So if they make you happier, keep them. I just
So you know, the Microsoft Essentials, yes, you can still run malware bytes and super anti spyware. But like super anti spyware, when you install it, it wants to automatically put it in the startup, so it starts up every time. You can go into the startup features of super anti spyware and turn that off. So at your discretion, you can run those other two programs at your discretion.
Okay, so with the anti-malware, I probably won't run into conflicts. If I kept Security Essentials, I probably should not be running AVG.
Correct.
Well, you don't want to run two antivirus programs simultaneously.
Yeah, that's what
correct.
I thought.
Right.
Okay, right. Thank you very much.
Right. Okie doke.
Oh, one thing I should mention, and probably do a little later on. Definitely. We got to do
an You're really in your own little world today, aren't you?
Yes, we got to do an Uncle Dave story hour.
This guy,
you know, just happened to preempt it. I had forgotten about it. And even though I mentioned to you before, you know, I got CRS anyways.
I know.
And, but yeah, I wanted, definitely an interesting situation came up. And I'll share it with our listeners between now and the end of the show for an Uncle Dave story hour, which I haven't done in a while, but this guy sort of, popped it back into my mind.
There you go. We will definitely be doing that. That'll be fine. But yeah, you know, pick an antivirus program that you're happy with. I prefer one that updates more regularly. I use ClamAV, ClamXAV on my Mac machines, and I use ClamAV on my Linux machine. And I use much of the Security Tango on my Windows machines. To me, those are the ones that update better. Okay, we got a couple of minutes. Our next caller is Joe from Buffalo. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Hi. You mentioned Google earlier. They also had another interesting point this week. Maybe people have or have not heard of Clearwire Communications. They're sort of a wireless internet provider.
Yep.
And Google had a 6.5% stake in that company. They purchased that stock for $500 million back in 2008.
Yep.
They just sold it off for $47 million, taking quite a loss on that one. A lot of people were speculating that, you know, since Google was into Android mobile phones, maybe they were also going to become a mobile phone provider. But I don't know. This kind of looks to me like they're kind of dropping that sort of notion.
Well, the Clearwire was one of the, I guess, proposed standards for 4G cellular. And Sprint was another big investor in Clearwire. And then when the ITU went with LTE instead, the Clearwire technology is kind of dying off because it's now not going to be the standard for 4G. So I'm wondering
if
they're
right.
Just
they wanted to use WiMAX instead of the LTE. That's right.
Right. And since that's no longer, you know, Google was basically betting and lost the bet. You know, millions and millions, billions of dollars. It's not that big a deal to them. I hate to say that, but it's not that big a deal to them. The Clearwire technology, I had a friend who had it. It was pretty good. You know, it was not incredible, but it was pretty doggone good, and at least here in Rochester. And I think Google, you know, they looked at the industry at the time and made the bet. You know, how do you go wrong with that? It is what it is, and they made a bet that didn't pan out. But they made the bet, and that's, you know, what makes them Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, another thing I'd like to mention for the people that are shopping online, like your previous caller, getting into the Apple store and having to, you know, enter either PayPal or debit card or something like that.
Right.
A lot of the credit card companies offer service where you have a merchant-specific credit card number for them. You typically would log on to their site and say, hey, generate one for me that's associated with my account. And you plug that in to whatever merchant's site, and then only that merchant can use that credit card number. If
right.
somebody else tries to use it, they just simply get denied.
Right.
And that's an interesting thing that happened to me recently. I made two Amazon purchases a couple of months apart, and I did that. I generated the number and put it in there. My goods came, and then a couple months later, I said, oh, okay, I want an additional handset for my cordless phone. And a DVD. And it comes up, oh, okay, do you want to use this credit card number? I go, okay, Amazon's Amazon. Not necessarily.
Well, most of those are actually one-time use credit card numbers.
They can be set up that way. Lot of them, though, you can use multiple times. Like, for example, to pay my Time Warner bill, they don't accept, at least when I set it up, they didn't accept a direct debit from my bank account. They would take credit cards. So my Time Warner bill always gets charged to, well, it happens to be my Discover card.
Right.
Here's the thing. The first purchase I made on Amazon was really only using Amazon's ordering system. They're actually, you know, you see all those ones when you're searching through the Amazon stuff.
Right.
It's sold by some third-party company. Well, I after I ordered it, the next day I said, your credit card is declined, and we can't tell you more about that why, but, you know, check the numbers and all. I thought to myself, oh, yeah, it was a company only using Amazon's infrastructure for
right.
ordering and charging and all that. It wasn't Amazon themselves, but the goods I bought last week, yes, they were sold directly by Amazon.
Got
so that
it.
can bite you sometimes.
Yep. Well, it's a good cautionary tale, and you're absolutely right, Joe. For those of you buying stuff online, take the extra minute, generate a special credit card number for that particular store, and even if it gets stolen, they can't use it.
One of the problems that has run into some of those one-time use credit cards, Steve Gibson on Security Now has talked about this, that he thought he was using a one-time use credit card to sign up for something, and it turned out that the way the credit card companies limit the card is it expires at the end of the month. So if you get it on the 1st, you've got 30 days the card is actually active. It's not
right.
one time,
be, right.
it's 1 month.
Right. You have to be very careful as to what you're getting and how it works, and you need to pay attention to that before you just sign up. But generally speaking, I had my credit card stolen once. I got a call from my bank, said, did you just buy a bunch of fur coats in Florida?
Oh, no.
That's a silly place to buy a fur coat.
Oddly, I did not. And so they and it really bothered me because I had memorized my old credit card number. Now I have no incentive to memorize the new one. You know, because it could go away at any minute.
Yeah.
But, same thing happened to me. I memorized my Discover card number, and I used to be able to just type it into websites and stuff like that. And it's like, and then they sent me a new one with a different credit card number.
Right. And so now you're disincentivized, shall we say, to memorizing it. Yeah.
Oh, the other one had lots of repeating digits too, so it was fairly easy to memorize. But the new one, forget that.
Yeah, exactly.
Besides, it's after they instituted the ability to generate a credit card.
Right, and you want that. You want to be able to generate that one time or one use, one company credit card number. I love those. I use them all the time. So it's a pretty cool deal. You just have to keep track of what that number is for that company in case they ask you to put it in again.
Yeah, well, you know, minor security risk. It you could put it in a plain text file and store it on your computer unencrypted because
they can't use it.
No one. You might as well write it down and say, oh, yeah, I purchased an Amazon purchase in February of 2012.
Right. No, I completely agree. It's a good deal. Go ahead.
They usually expire at the same time as your main credit card number, too, at least mine do.
Right, and you can renew them again, yeah?
Sure.
So if you want to keep buying things from Amazon, you could do that.
Oh, yeah. Should be no problem at all.
Yep. So that's great information, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pretty interesting fact, and a lot of people don't know it, and a lot of people don't take advantage of it. But if you create a special credit card number for a specific place, then even if that number gets stolen, they can't use it for anything else. All right, that music tells me that we're going to take a quick break. So please pay attention to all the beautiful pieces of information that will be coming your way in the next few minutes. And then I'm afraid if you stick around, you're going to hear a whole nother hour of us. We'll be back with more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco. You can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. As we continue with yet another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Bodan did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Calling you in the second hour of the program because I just spent the last 15, 20 minutes on the phone with a vast antivirus support.
Oh.
I upgraded my antivirus version to version 7, which is the latest one, but... And everything seems to be fine. It says that I am fully, secured and everything. But when I start my computer up every morning, I get this box that says, complete your Avast, upgrade to Avast 7. You're almost done. The box says, press the finish button to complete the upgrade. Well, I do press the finish button. I've pressed the finish button a number of times, but also I uncheck the little box that says participate in the Avast community. I don't know. I just don't feel like participating in the Avast community.
Sure.
But so I unchecked that box and then hit the finish button. Well, if I was to turn off my computer or restart it, that little box again comes up. Complete your upgrade to Avast 7. Press the finish button to complete the upgrade. And again, I'll uncheck the Avast community participate box. And every time I start the computer. So the guy at customer support, who was in India or somewhere in Asia, and I hope I just didn't get scammed. It didn't cost me anything, but he asked me to run something. He took me to a website, 1mb.com/PD, which technically he asked me to run something just to get the, to do a scan of my computer and then tell him what it came up. But the results are on a website or a page that says iYogi. And, of course, they do offer a 365-day plan to, run your, to keep your computer clean for $169. Though this guy never tried to sell me anything. He says, I have an issue because there's two things that came up. A registry issue came up with an error, but doesn't exactly say what, and a Windows update. Actually, this morning, I just verified there are no Windows updates for XP Home right now. And I'm up to date.
Yeah, it looks like 1MB and iYogi are just a remote assistance software.
Okay.
To allow him remote access into your computer to make the fixes.
Any ideas, anyone else, since you guys, has anyone else had issues with upgrading to Avast 7, getting that box saying every time you start your computer or restart it that it says pressing the finish button, which I do, and then if I restart it the next day or turn the computer around the next day, I still get that same box as if I, have to press that.
It sounds like a registry error.
Yeah,
it's not writing the final code to the registry.
That's what I read on my machine is Avast, and no, I'm up to date, and it's fine.
So how could I possibly correct this registry alleged error?
Maybe do a complete uninstall and reinstall?
The program?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things. Actually,
use the Revo to uninstall it.
Uh-huh.
So it thoroughly gets it out of there, and there's no registry entries or anything else. So, like they say, if there's anything pointing it to the wrong DLL or whatever, this will maybe correct it.
I wonder if it's something as simple as there's still something in your startup group. Or maybe a run equals entry in your registry. It's to
well,
run
that's what
that
I'm saying.
Complete,
if he does it,
I do have Revo, and so I should. I can play around with it this afternoon. I'll completely uninstall Avast, but then my machine will.
Disconnect from the internet while you're uninstalling and reinstalling.
But then I have to then.
Well, download the installer.
Download the installer,
and then disconnect from the internet so you can uninstall it and reinstall it. And then the first thing you do after connecting back to the internet is run all the updates.
Okay. All right. I will do that.
All right.
Now, if you don't have no other calls on hold, I have another issue with an update. It's for Office OpenOffice, currently running version number 3.1. I understand there's a new version 3.3. When I hit the button to check for updates on the Open Office program to go up to 3.3. It spins for about 60 seconds, and I still have it open right now. It says, checking for an update failed. Description, error reading data from the internet. Server error message could not read status line, and existing connection was forcibly closed by the remote host. I've done the attempt to update my Open Office now three or four times, and I get that same update failed.
I wonder if that's part of the forking problem.
Yeah, OpenOffice is a free piece of software. It is open source and has been forked into something called LibreOffice. It's an interesting question and an interesting problem. I haven't had...
You should explain forking.
Yeah, let me go back a step. Forking is when
LibreOffice is 3.5.
Right. What's happened is that OpenOffice, for a while... stopped updating.
Okay.
The people who were using it, who were creating it, stopped updating it. There was all kinds of problems with Star and Star Office and yada, yada, yada. And what happened was a bunch of people, because it's free code, a bunch of people who used to work on OpenOffice left the company, took the source code, which was perfectly legal to do, and created LibreOffice, and that's actually gone farther now than OpenOffice has.
Do you think it's a better program?
It is at the moment, absolutely. So my actual suggestion would be to uninstall OpenOffice and install LibreOffice, L-I-B-R-E.
L-I-B-R-E.
Office.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's, of course, .org.
Yep. And then the fix for the OpenOffice problem would be to uninstall OpenOffice and download the latest OpenOffice manually.
Yeah, that's another option I thought of doing. Yeah. But if it's just a minor, goes from version 3.1 to 3.3, I don't use that program that often, but in case somebody sends
and me... That may be the problem, because 3.2 is where it forked, I'm finding here.
Say again?
When OpenOffice 3.2 is where it forked. When Oracle bought Sun, there was a whole mess with who owns OpenOffice, and so there was 3.2 was when they announced the end of life for 2.0, and so all this mess. So that's probably why it's not working. Is your 3.1 update key is looking for a website that doesn't exist anymore?
Okay. Because I actually went into I'm using the Windows firewall, and I actually added a number of the Office, OpenOffice, options
that's
allow
a good
it to
test.
Go in. But that didn't do anything either, so I unchucked them.
Yeah, that's often a good test is to turn off your firewall or allow those updaters to go through the firewall.
But still, it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
All right, I will take your recommendation. I'm going to uninstall those two programs, Avast, and do the download again. And then I'll play with OpenOffice. That's not that big of a deal. As I said, I only may use that program once every couple of weeks.
Right.
All right, I thank you for your advice on the Avast issue. And, hopefully no one else has the problem that I've occurred within the last couple of days of upgrading to version 7 on Avast.
Sure. Good luck.
Thank you.
And I actually had some really good news this week with Microsoft Project. We get a lot of people on the Mac side looking for something like Microsoft Project. Microsoft stopped making the Mac version of Project in 94. They started in 94. They stopped in 99. I actually went and looked that up. But now there is an open source project management program called OpenProj, and it's will read MS Project files. So you can download it for Windows, Mac. I'm guessing that's Red Hat Linux, yeah. and Penguin Linux.
just Linux.
Just Linux itself. So
I can't see the red thing. Could be.
And then it scrolls off.
Oh, that's the little red devil.
The little red devil.
Oh, help!
Not Red Hat. Well, for pretty much every platform. So. Project management software, especially for Mac people, you can now get a free program for doing project management that opens Microsoft Project files. So you can do Gantt charts and PERT charts and all the other stuff. If I go to the download button, it will ask me who or what I'm downloading from. And Nick is still frantically trying to look up what that red icon is.
I should know. The guys are going to tell me. Oh, a BSD. Thank you. I just could not think of both Chris Wright and Archandra on the IRC channel. Both
gotcha.
Got me for it. It just flew out of my mind. It just flew out of
CRS.
My mind.
CRS.
Exactly right. Kraft. All right, our next caller is Don from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Earlier I heard you talking about these one-time credit cards. Sounds like a great idea because I get very nervous with giving my credit card over the Internet. Yep. How does one go about it? You know, you were talking about it, but...
Well, it depends on who your credit card issuer is, but what you do is you go to their website.
Generally, your bank.
Your bank.
You have a Chase credit card, or you have a
M&T
credit card.
Yeah,
I couldn't think of any other bank.
You log. It's good advertising in their part.
Really?
I use M&T.
Yeah, right. Not anymore. Yeah, if any of them are listening.
Manufacturers and Traders Trust Company.
Yeah, that's not helping. You're just digging. Stop digging. Is really what you have to do at this moment.
Dug real deep.
Don, are you still there? Here's the deal. Here's the deal. What you do is you log on to your bank, right, with your username and password, and somewhere on that site, and I can't tell you where because I'm not your bank.
Each one is different.
Well,
yeah.
Right. But somewhere on that site will be information about that one-time thing. What you might want to do is wait till Monday and call the bank directly and ask them where to find it on their website.
Okay, well, that's good. Because I hadn't heard of this, and to me, what a fantastic idea is being able to use it once.
Many of them do it. I won't say, I don't know that all of them do it, but I know that many of them
and
do
And some
it.
Use different names. I just found that Bank of America calls it Safe Shop,
mm-hmm.
And it's fraud protection on a credit card. So it may not be specifically a one-time use. As we mentioned earlier, some of them are actually one-time use. It only works once. Some of them will work until the end of the month, and then they expire. So each bank does it slightly differently.
Okay, well, thank you very much, because, as I said, I only heard the part about using them and not how you went about using them.
Right. And it is different for each bank.
Thank you very much.
But good for you. Thanks, yep. Don. Good luck.
So that was always one of the early annoyances we had, is that people were afraid to put their credit card number into a website to buy something.
Right.
But they'll hand it to a waiter who disappears with it for 20 minutes.
Right. All day long, we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in America and don't think anything about it.
It's the truth.
Yep. Yeah. When my credit card was stolen, they said it was a local thing, and they know who did it, and they got the guy, and it was not over the internet. It was a local place. I had handed them my credit card.
Like Steve said.
What are you going to do?
Yep. Yeah, hey, that's why, they changed a lot of the rules about printing off the whole credit card. Now they just print off the last four digits, numbers. Yep. But even the thing.
We actually had to get a new credit card writer, because our old machine couldn't be reprogrammed to not print all the digits.
Yeah, that was
just use Square.
Yeah.
Square.
Ready?
Is it time? I believe it's time, ladies and gentlemen, kiddies. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready. I'm ready for this one. And I think folks can all relate to this. I know you two gentlemen can too, not only in the business world, but into your real life world. And what I'm talking about is how much we love telemarketers.
Now, do not get me started.
Exactly. Well, I'll let you chime in too. But, who was it? I forget what comedian said, there's always a way. You got to get back at them. Find ways to get back at them.
Keep an air horn handy.
Well,
now most of them are just, they're people who are doing a job.
Trying to earn some money.
Nothing, God bless them. They're out there earning a living.
Well, Thursday afternoon, Sam had to, was it Thursday? One of the days. I can't remember. Crap, anyways. But anyways, Sam had to take off. She was sick. So I stayed in the shop while Dan was going out on calls answering the phones.
That's always a fun job.
Oh, I just love that. Put hot pokers in my ears. But, so I'm sitting there answering the phone, and I get this one gentleman call me up. Can I speak to Dave Enright, please? I go, can I help you? Yeah, I need to speak to Dave Enright.
There's a clue right off. Yep.
Well, he's not here right now. Can I help you? No, but I need to speak to him. I have his? Does he have a cell phone that I could get a hold of? I says, no, sir. I'm sorry, we don't hand that out. Well, he's a real good friend of mine. Oh, I've known him for years. Since he's been in business, and this guy is going on and on and on. I'm going, oh, really? So you really know him pretty well? Oh, yes. We have done business together for a long time, and that and I know he wouldn't mind. So would you mind giving me his cell number? And I'll just touch base with him, and we'll get caught up and all that. And I go, oh, really? I says, you sure you don't want, I'll gladly take your name and number. No, I can't. I'd got to speak to directly to Dave Enright. I says, well, then, sir, after I'm leading him on for a few, this is quite clearly, you don't know Dave Enright. Well, how do you know that? I says, because I am. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And hung up. But I was stringing him on for a good two, three minutes, having a great time at it, because he's feeding me more stuff about doing this and this and that. And it's like, oh, really?
We have a pretty good way of recognizing telemarketers at our office, because both Jackie and I, our names aren't spelled quite like everyone else spells their names. And so when they mispronounce it, we know, oh, they don't know her.
Right. But
I love it when they ask for Mr. Frederick.
Yeah. He's in Hollywood. We can't help you right now.
Yep.
But I had so much fun with that. And I was still, and Dan came back in and he goes, what's going on? What's going on? And I started telling him. He goes, that's a good, I got to remember that one. Because we get them all the time for the business. And I found out one of the other things, we got the basic business line, blocked. But then you got to go, because see, technically ours comes into the one and then rolls over to two other numbers, because we've got four lines. And
right.
So it's those other numbers
right.
that I got to go in there now, and that kind of woke me up to the fact that I got to go in there and put them yeah. on the do not call.
Right.
We noticed that, too. People will call on line two at our office, and yeah. then we finally found out why. The phone book has line two listed first.
Nice.
And all of our rollover lines are listed separately, including our fax line, and line two is listed first.
God bless the phone
book. Why
company.
Do they list? Don't they automatically don't roll over?
Yeah, they automatically roll over. But
why do you list them then?
We don't. The phone company in the white pages. They're automatically all listed. Well, this is a 20-year story. Getting us listed to begin with has been a problem.
You might not want to. I remember that. You might not want to screw around with the fact being finally listed. Yeah. You just might want to say, okay, we're in. That's really all that counts at this point.
Our numbers are there. Yeah. Okay, we'll answer line two first.
But my big thing, though, is I'm still wondering if this guy's going to call back.
Well, yeah.
Well, we use fake names for people when solicitors call. Oh, yeah, that's Jill's job. She's not in today.
Right.
That's a good one.
I'll call back. Sure.
But Sam gets very creative with it. I mean, I think that's some form of entertainment for her because the way she deals with some of them.
You know, I had a guy call me one day, and he starts in about how I've won this trip. They want to get you to Florida to sell you a condo, right? I've won this trip to Florida and blah, 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 blah. And I just went on and on and on. Oh, my God, I won something? I've never won anything in my life. I'm so excited. I just can't believe it. I won. Oh, thank you so much. God bless you. This is the greatest day of my life. I think this is wonderful. I finally have won something. And the guy eventually just said, well, I'm really sorry you haven't won anything. We just want to sell you a condo. And I got all disappointed. Really? I thought I'd won something.
Or will they say, great, will they let me out of prison for that?
You're right. So I eventually had him hang up. He hung up on me. I've never had a telemarketer actually hang up on me, and this guy did. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. Our phone numbers are 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. The U.S. mobile phone industry. Oh, you can give us a call, by the way, at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, the U.S. mobile phone industry is running out of the airwaves necessary to provide voice, text, and internet services to its customers. The problem, known as spectrum crunch, threatens to increase the number of dropped calls, slow down data speeds, and raise customers' prices. Excellent. It will also whittle down the nation's number of wireless carriers and create a deeper financial divide between those companies that have capacity and those that don't. Wireless spectrum, the invisible infrastructure over which all wireless transmissions travel, is a finite resource. When exactly we'll hit the wall is the subject of intense debate, but almost everyone in the industry agrees that a crunch is coming. The U.S. still has a slight spectrum surplus, which was not a bright sentence for me to have written. But at the current growth rate, the surplus turns into a deficit as early as next year, according to the Federal Communication Commission's estimates. Network traffic is increasing, said an official at the FCC's Wireless Bureau. Carriers can manage it for the next couple of years, but demand is inevitably going to exceed the available spectrum. The number one biggest driver is consumers' insatiable thirst for email, apps, and particularly video on their mobile devices anywhere, anytime. Global mobile data traffic is just about doubling every year and will continue to do so through at least 2016. According to Cisco's Mobile Visual Networking Index, the industry's most comprehensive annual study. The iPhone, for instance, uses 24 times as much spectrum as an old-fashioned cell phone. The iPad uses 122 times as much, according to the FCC. AT&T said wireless data traffic on its network has grown 20,000% since the iPhone debuted in 2007. We got into this principally because technology and demand exploded at a rate that nobody anticipated. Another catalyst is the way the U.S. government allocated spectrum. The bands that wireless companies hold were broken up into smaller chunks across various markets, which was helpful increasing competition in the 1990s, but the patchwork nature has proven problematic for new technologies like high-speed 4G broadband. Bigger swaths of uninterrupted spectrum provide the larger amounts of bandwidth needed for delivering faster speeds. One more contributing factor is the TV broadcasters and government agencies like NASA and the Department of Defense hold some of the best spectrum, relatively low-frequency radio waves that can travel long distances and penetrate buildings. So, what do you think will happen when we run out of spectrum? Give us a call while you still can. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Bob did from Rochester, New York. Bob.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Hi, guys.
Hello there, sir.
Glad to listen to one of my two favorite radio shows.
Exactly.
Thank you.
This is,
I wish you were still a neighbor of mine.
Me too. Me too. May I say who this is?
Sure.
This is the world famous.
All right.
And sexy as hell, Bob Brenna of Brenna, Brenna and Boyce Law Forum. And he's a wonderful human being and my friend.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Same here. I've met Bob a number of times.
Yep.
Listen, thanks so much for all the help for people about the credit cards. And I wanted to mention one thing to you that has been a scam that a lot of seniors have fallen for. When a person calls in and says, I'm from your bank, and similar to what you just said, Nick, about when you got the phone call saying that your card had been grabbed.
Yep.
But this one is really a scary one. The person calls in, gives you your full name, reads you your full account number, reads you your address, and tells you everything that you would think only your bank would know. They claim they're from the fraud department. And they say, we usually only monitor purchases over $500, but one came through from Tucson for $495. Did you just do that? You say, no, it's not legit. They say, no problem. We'll remove it right away. And if you have any other problems, just call us back on the card number that you've got on the back of your card for fraud or loss and take care. You won't be charged. And then they say, oh, by the way, before I hang up, do you physically have your card? Because we have to use that on our screen to close out the investigation. You say, yes, I have my card. And they say, okay, could you just read us the security code off the back so we can close the screen? So even when they got your account number, people don't realize how valuable that code is. And I've had a lot of vendors say to me they needed the code to finish a transaction. I say, you really don't. Just hit the button, and a lot of times that works. But
yeah, on our credit card machine, there's an option that says skip.
And how do you guys do the limited card, the gift card for Apple?
What you do is you buy an iTunes card anywhere. I mean, I think they sell them on Sabret's cards. So, you know, buy an iTunes card anywhere. And then when you go to sign up for your Apple ID, the way you do it is you go to the store, you go to the market immediately. Skip signing. You know, when you first turn on an iPad, it asks you if you want to join. You skip that.
Okay.
Then you go to the market and go to buy something, whether it's free or not, does not matter. And when they ask you for your information, you sign up, but you give them the number on the iTunes card.
Okay.
And then from then on, and then eventually that amount will go away. But
getting the iTunes card in the first place is easy.
Yeah, pretty much any
most stores,
any bookstore, any
Wegmans.
Any grocery. Wegmans has them. Barnes and Noble has them. 7-Eleven has them. Pretty much. You know, any office supply stores
have
them.
Gift cards for a lot of different stores,
and one of them is iTunes.
We sell them at our stores too.
See how little I know now that I've lost touch with you guys.
Well, see, you need to know these things. I mean, you've got your own app and everything now.
Well, I do. I do. I think we're the only ones, Nick.
I think you are.
They're going to come out, but I'm really glad. We've had ours out about 4 months, and it's for Android and iPhone, and I like it.
It's a good app. And now people who want it can download it from the iTunes store for free, and if they aren't a member, they can join with their iTunes card.
I like it. And
there
you go. Our website's got the Q readers, which people are starting to teach me what that means.
Oh, the Q card, the QR codes?
Yep.
Yeah, those are the Those are the coolest things ever.
Can I tell people how they can get at it?
Well, you should explain them what
the Q cards
are. I don't
know that you're allowed to do that here.
No, okay. I would tell them about
the
Q cards. The
other thing I wanted to say is that since I'm such fans of you guys, I would like to join the membership at your station, so I'm going to do that.
Excellent.
Thank
That's
you very
what I'd
much.
Like to hear, my friend.
Just to
wait
say
until
for all you folks do. By the way, Nick, last week when I was on the air on my show, somebody called my cell phone. I was furious.
I cannot imagine who would do that.
Could you believe such a thing would happen?
What a horrible and disgusting
who would
and terrible
do that?
Thing. Thank heaven no one's ever done that to me. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, well, you can tell them I did that to you a little while ago.
Yes, you did. Okay.
But I chose a break, at least.
You did, and that's what I appreciate that very much.
Well, I didn't want to call in cold without saying hello. So
thank you, Bob.
All right, guys, you take care.
Keep smiling,
Thanks
my
for
friend.
All you do for the community too.
Thank you.
No,
you do way more than.
And I think a lot of the iPad setups now will allow you to attach a iTunes card when you're first setting up your iPad too, because so many people have wanted to do that and not put your. You can always put your real credit card in and then log into your account, take your credit card out and put the iTunes card in too.
Right.
No, stepping back, what you should explain.
The QR codes.
Yes, you should explain those to folks.
I will. The QR codes, you're seeing them everywhere now.
Yeah.
They're those blocky little black and white square graphic things you see everywhere.
Yep.
And you can scan them with your phone. I don't know of a smartphone that doesn't have an app available for it.
Yeah.
And that QR code can then do a bunch of different things. It could be a phone number. It could be a website. It could be specific text. It could be dang near anything. It could be download this app. It could be all kinds of stuff. And we're seeing them in all kinds of places for all kinds of things. I've actually been toying with the idea of putting it on my business card. So if you want to call me, you just scan it.
A lot of people are doing that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It's kind of an old idea. There was an old thing called the QCAT.
I can't find mine.
I have one. It doesn't work anymore, but I have one.
I had one
magazines,
that worked, and it's stored somewhere.
Magazines used to put these barcodes in all their articles where before the web, basically, you'd scan the thing and you could get information about the company. And then for a while.
That looking thing?
Yeah, well, this one actually looked like a mouse.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
cat,
those. Yeah.
Otherwise, they would have called it the Q mouse.
Yeah, it looks like a. and then what was that magazine that actually put code?
Yeah,
in
soft,
the magazine.
Soft.
And I bought that scanner where you scan, because we used to type code from magazines. That you know, like 20 pages of code was a program you could get. Nibble, I think it was.
Oh, Nibble did it.
And so I bought the scanner so you could just scan the barcodes in. And then you didn't have to type all the code yourself and make 100 spelling mistakes.
Right, exactly.
I've got one of those scanners somewhere, too.
But these QR codes, very easy to make. There's 100 places you can make them. You can make them on your cell phone. And they're little square, blocky, black and white things. You've seen them everywhere. They're on billboards now. I cannot imagine pulling over to the side of the road, taking out my phone and scanning it. But you could do it. And they will lead you off to do any one of a million different things. And they're very, very clever. They're very nice. They come in all different sizes and colors and densities. There's a million websites on the web. They're QR codes. Q as in quick and R as in ready.
I know last year at the Jazz Fest, they were starting to use them a lot. You know, they'd have different posters up. You could just, especially for the different concerts that were coming up for the night, I saw folks going up to it, and they just scan it, and it told them what time they were going to be on, the whole
You can embed a lot more information than you can in a regular barcode.
Yep. And again, it depends on how dense you make that code. You can honestly put an amazing amount of information in them. You can also make them very, very light. I actually have one for my students that takes them to my office hours webpage and all of that stuff. And it's undense, sparse enough that I can actually put a little image of my face in the middle of it. Because there's a whole lot of error correction and a whole lot of other stuff. So it looks like noise, and it just ignores it.
At the highest data encoding, you can put almost 8K on it, which doesn't sound like a lot, but nearly 7,000 characters. That's a lot of textual information.
Yeah. They're pretty nifty things. You're seeing them everywhere. Are they going to take over the world? I who knows? But they're convenient to a point. Like I said, every smartphone, we have to stop calling them smartphones because they're just phones now.
Yeah.
They're kind of average phones. But every smartphone has one, has a reader for them, a scanner. On the Android phone, it's called barcode scanner, and it's free. You can download it from the App Store.
That, like you say, they pack so much in it, and it's funny that it's coming back around. But I, now that you mentioned that mouse, the cat device, they had them here at the station for a while.
Yep.
When we first came here, I remember them having that out, and I'm wondering, boy, I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yep. And Google has something called Google Goggles. Yep. Which you can scan almost anything and get information about it.
Yep. I found a picture of phones before the iPhone. They're all different shapes, all different colors, all different styles. Phones after the iPhone. They all look like an iPhone.
Yeah, exactly right. that's not necessarily a good thing, but it is what it is. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be and try to get over Bob Brenner calling in. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. He's going to get me for that. Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And you can call us on Sound Bites at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like nobody apparently did.
Lost them.
I'm sorry, I lost them both.
He had Mark and then he had Art, or first he had Art and then he had Mark. Or
please call back. We'll try to get you back on.
I don't know who we've got, but we've got somebody. Dave is frantically putting somebody back online.
And reminding us once again that these phones weren't designed for a call-in radio show.
They really, really weren't. Okay. We have Art from Ontario on the line. Art?
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi there. Ontario, New York, or Ontario, Canada?
No, this is Penfield, New York.
Penfield.
And this is Art?
Mark.
All right.
Okay, Mark.
Hang on, Art. We'll get to you.
Dave I've needs a lie old. Down now. He's, he doesn't know what he's doing.
No, right, wait a minute. Oh, wow. I just sent this guy somewhere, and now he's back.
Sit down. Just sit down. Well, what can we do for you, Mark?
I've got a couple of Mac questions. Do you have any thoughts on security software for an iPad, and what do you recommend for security for the Mac?
Well, I've been playing with that Lookout that Nick has recommended in the past on the iPad itself. Warns you when you're connected to unsecure networks. It's a little tricky on the iPad, sort of because of the sandboxing, that applications generally can't talk to other applications. There's a lot of security sort of built in from the scratch from when they designed it. And then on the Mac, on the Security Tango website, we've got the Mac Arena that shows off some of the security programs, as Nick mentioned earlier, ClamX AV for antivirus. There's a couple of anti-malware programs. There's one called Mac Scan. It's not free, which is annoying. Well, it's free to scan, but you have to pay to actually remove. But fortunately, there haven't been that many issues on the Mac. Although I just read this week, there's a Java exploit popping up again. If you have not updated your Java lately, there's an old exploit. Let me see if I can find the name of it. That's popping up, claiming to be a update that you need, and it installs a backdoor. Some of the basic advice we give on the PC as well: make sure all your updates are installed and everything loaded. There it is. The Flashback G Trojan is hitting Macs that have outdated Java, and they're being a little sneaky. Because when you install a program on your Mac and when you run a program that you downloaded from the internet, it says you downloaded this program from the internet. And when you run a Java app, you get a little message saying, do you want to run this Java app? So this one is sneaky, and it says it's signed by Apple Inc. And if you look really close, it's self-signed, and it says the name is Apple Inc. So the bad guys are getting a little sneakier trying to get into your computer. But it's just sort of vigilance and updates to make sure you keep everything updated.
I appreciate that. I know we're coming up close on the end of the show. I want to squeeze in one more thing. I read an article in Wired a few months back about they did a study on the radiation that the Wi-Fi antenna and the 3G antenna has on the iPad. Did you guys mention that, or have any thoughts on the radiation that an iPad transmits?
Well, you mean, it's not just the iPad. It's any device that does Wi-Fi. It's a radio signal.
Right.
Yeah. They're everywhere.
And cell phones,
right.
Period. Yeah.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of anecdotal evidence. There was a big issue with police radar guns. There was a higher incidence of testicular cancer in police officers who put the radar gun in their lap. And then a lot of police agencies mounted the gun on the side of the car, and then there were brain tumors. But anything with high EM is potential for damaging your cells. But generally speaking, there isn't enough evidence to say that there's a problem. There was a regulation that was trying to get pushed through Canada to require cell phone companies to include their radiation data on data sheets. So when you go to the store, it says that this phone generates this much radiation. It basically got blocked down because radiation is such a scary word. Most people think ionizing, nuclear radiation that will kill you from an atom bomb. But radiation just means any type of electromagnetic signal that radiates. A light bulb radiates.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's it's all anecdotal evidence. Clearly, you know what? Whether you've got an iPad or not, there's so much radio spectrum going through you right now. The iPad really isn't going to make a big difference.
No, and I completely agree. I'm not being paranoid. When read the article, sometimes you're sitting in bed, I have the iPad, I'm reading through the website, and the things are up against my chest or something, and I don't know if anybody's thought about, if they've had any concerns about how close it actually is to you, but I'm not going paranoid. I'm just wondering what you're for.
Right.
Yeah, when some of the stories came out about cell phones, the usual advice was to use a Bluetooth headset, so then the cell phone is farther away from your head, because you're basically holding a radio transmitter up to your head that's generating huge amounts of radio frequency radiation.
Yeah, but Bluetooth is a radio generator.
But it's smaller and less, yeah, so it has to go a few feet instead of a few miles.
Well, that's one of the things I actually like about e-book readers. Once I've loaded my book, I can turn off the radio, which A, saves the battery, and B, means that, I'm lying in bed and I fall asleep with this thing on my chest or next to my head or whatever, and it doesn't matter.
I found an article about a man from Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm so used to Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Charlotte. who wrote an iPad app. I'm going to have to download this. That measures radiation. And I want to know how it does that, because I don't think there was a radiation sensor.
There isn't a dosimeter in,
it. In
there anywhere.
But he wrote it after the Japanese earthquake and tsunami with the problems there with the nuclear plant. So I got to see how this works.
Interesting.
I wonder if it's just there's an RF radio transceiver built into the iPads and iPhones and basically every radio device. I wonder if he's just mapping RF radiation.
Yeah, it might be. Like I said, when you've got an e-book reader or an iPod, I just turned one of my old phone into an iPod, and it's essentially a music player that's based on Android because it's my old phone. But it's not a bad idea to turn the radio off. It can't hurt. It's probably not going to help much, but it can't hurt.
Yeah, the big worry is the cumulative effect of millions of devices all around you all the time, and what's going to happen in the next generation of children.
All right, does that answer your question?
Yeah, you guys are great. One more quick thing is, when I listen to your program on the iPad, during the program breaks, sometimes the stream just loses. I lose it, and then I have to restart the stream to get it back. I don't know if you guys have seen that before or not.
We'll put that to our stream provider. Thank you.
There's an error message on the streaming computer that...
No, it's an update.
Okay.
It wants an update. It's wanted that update for like a year.
Yeah. Are you listening to the audio stream or the video stream?
I think he's gone.
He's gone, yeah. Yeah, the audio stream is handled by one of the computers here in the studio. The video stream, we're using YouTube. So I'm uploading the video to, not YouTube,
all right,
Ustream.
Our next caller is Art. Art, you're calling from Ontario?
Yes.
New York?
Ontario County. I have a question about the QR codes. I've received bank statements that have a little micro code on the sheets and also barcode information on the sheets. Now, is this any sensitive information about my account or
the
what?
The best thing to do is if you have or know someone with a smartphone, read it. Like I said, there are a bunch of barcode scanner apps that are available, and they will tell you what that barcode says. You'll find one on the outside of many envelopes. That's just routing information for the post office. But what's on your credit card bill or bank statement, I don't know.
There's a little thing. It's about less than a quarter inch square.
It's probably some sort of routing information, so when it gets the letter gets printed, it gets matched up with the right envelope with the right address on it. I see that now and then. I'll get two letters in an envelope, one for the next alphabetical person, I guess. And I always want to send it to them anyway because they should have gotten it themselves.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I would suggest.
I don't have a reader or know anyone who has, so I tear those sections off the paper and use that to pacify myself while I'm watching TV ads.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
Okay.
Thanks, Art.
Okay. Thank you.
It's hard to know on any one particular bank, but you should if those are the kind of things that worry you, and you have a smartphone, there are, like I said, a million apps out there that do this. The simplest one is barcode scanner. Google Goggles does it. There's 50 of them on iPhone-type devices as well. So just download one and use it. You don't have to go where it says to go, but you can see what it says in the QR code or barcode or whatever. Stop. I need eye bleach now. Dave is dancing. All right, we're way past done for another week.
I still have fun on my Thursday show. Luckily, nobody else is in the
studio.
Yeah,
exactly. Go have fun there. We want to thank all those of you who called in. If you didn't call in, I don't know why not. Call in next week, and we'll be more than delighted to talk to you. In the meantime, we're done for another week. We're getting out of here to make room for George and the German show. It's going to be phenomenal. And we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.